Dan menjelang pembentangan rancangan Malaysia ke-12 RMK-12 di Parlimen 27 September depan, tumpuan sudah pastinya terarah kepada pelan kerajaan membawa keluar Malaysia dari kemelut COVID-19 yang melanda ketika ini. Tinjauan Astro Awani dalam kalangan warga Kedah mendapati selain daripada pembangunan, sektor kesihatan pelan berkenaan juga perlu memberikan manfaat besar kepada kumpulan keluarga berpendapatan rendah.
Harapan di masa akan datang macam bahagian kesihatan akan bertambah bertambah baik lagi lah dari segi management macam tu. Sebabnya macam benda ni pun bermula dengan kesihatan kita kan. Di masa akan datang tu pihak KKM akan buat sesuatu yang lebih efisien dalam menangani masalah pandemik ni.
Pendapat pakcik bagi B40 ni untuk bagi kerajaan pertimbang dan rancangan ke-12 ni pertimbangkan bagi B40 ni macam di segi secara keuangan kan, bantuan keuangan dan bagi pihak pakcik ni kalau kata meluak menak ni makna kata di segi keuangan lah yang paling penting.
Harapan saya berharap kerajaan kebanyakanlah untuk apa ni peluang untuk anak-anak muda
dari sudut
pekerjaan semua boleh permudahkan urusan pinjaman-pinjaman untuk perniagaan-perniagaan kecil untuk anak-anak muda memulakan perniagaan sebab ramai di kalaya anak-anak muda yang
terkesan
dengan pandemik semua ni lepas tu dan ramai anak-anak muda yang berminat dalam perniagaan.
Dan pada tahun ini, kerajaan lancarkan Malaysia Digital Economy Blueprint dengan sasaran untuk meningkatkan sumbangan ekonomi digital kepada KDNK. Laporan McKinsey pada Oktober 2020, lapor yang COVID-19 dan sekatan yang dilakukan untuk kawal penularannya akibatkan peningkatan kepantasan penggunaan teknologi digital sebanyak beberapa tahun. Dan kita sedia maklum yang pendapatan transaksi e-dagang melonjak 30% pada suku tahun pertama 2021. Namun, e-dagang adalah sebahagian sahaja daripada komponen ekonomi digital. Pelajar menggunakan PDPR untuk sesi persekolahan sebelum ini. Saya dan juga anda ada kalanya bekerja dari rumah. Mesyuarat dilakukan di atas talian dan proses pendigitalan perniagaan meningkat dan penggunaan e-wallet juga meningkat. Jadi apa seharusnya jadi fokus Malaysia menerusi RMK12 dalam skop teknologi digital dan bagaimana untuk pastikan transformasi dan ekonomi digital ini inklusif? Dan kita bersama dengan pengarah urusan Google Malaysia Mark Wu untuk membincangkan berkenaan dengan RMK12 dari sudut ekonomi digital. Izinkan saya meneruskan dalam bahasa Inggeris. Mark, thank you for joining us. Mark, tell us about the state of SMEs in Malaysia now. Many states have started to relax the strict MCOs that prompted these SMEs to go online. Would this spell the end or decline of e-commerce activities and digitalization in Malaysia? How are these SMEs moving forward into 2022?
Rizal, good morning. So thank you for having me. I would say that all online activities will continue to thrive. Confident.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think about it, when someone can find information at their fingertips, easily watch a video on YouTube with limited bandwidth, and purchase something on their phones on the go, I think the speed, convenience, and pricing is really unmatched.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen this rise in online services for more than a decade, you know, COVID or no COVID, just that the pandemic accentuated the need for all these online services. So when I match that against the lifeblood of the economy, SMEs, who employ over 70% of the workforce, if they have not already adopted this more enhanced consumerism or this new trend, get on it today. And if they need to train themselves or their employees, we offer a free program called a Market Digital Bazaar.
But income for e-commerce, of course, recorded steady growth in 2020 and in the first quarter of 2021. In the first quarter of 2021, income for e-commerce recorded 254.6 billion ringgit with an increase of about 30%, as I said earlier, year on year. How do we sustain this growth moving forward?
So the growth, I'm confident, will be sustained by one driving force. And the driving force is the Malaysian consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They, like I said, they want the ease, they want convenience, they want a wide variety of access. Stores are opening up. I think that's great. I don't think in the future it will be a binary choice,
mm-hmm.
whether you buy solely in the stores or solely on e-commerce. I think a lot of products will be bought online, some at physical stores, but a lot of research will be done in a hybrid manner. Now, you know, throughout the pandemic, what we saw was 1/3 of the population, the Malaysian population, over 10 million of them, and most of them from the rural areas, were first-time users to online services. So what I mean by online services, paying for video content, purchasing something tangible online, using food delivery as a service, right? And all of them, when we did this research with them, all of them said that they will continue using it.
Mm-hmm.
So the growth will be sustained, the driving force consumers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, digital technology will then become the bread and butter, whether it's your internal operating process or your sales channels. So businesses who are reluctant to change and adapt, in a way, we know the outcome, but go where the consumers are and follow their footsteps.
I like what you said earlier about it's not a binary choice between A or B, digital or going to physical stores. Tell us more about this. I mean, will this be prevalent in all the activities we do moving forward?
I think so, yes. I think it's going to be increasingly prevalent, right? Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of factors to this, but there are some that are still quite a mainstay, if you will. Think about the research that you do prior to buying any items. Think about the inspiration that you get from browsing online on something that you don't really need, but you know you want it. So you know a lot of all this, I would say, the non-high-value products that are new to you, you would do a lot of research online for sure, and then you would choose whether to go to the store to feel, to touch, to try it on, right? And then if the pricing is right, you would buy it. But if the pricing is better online, which you can get all of the information at your fingertips, you'll buy it online. So I think the choices is so like varied now. It's fantastic. It's great. It's great for consumers, but for the businesses, extremely complex.
And Mark, looking at the change of behavior, what are your thoughts about the 12th Malaysia plan and how will the digital economy blueprint fit into this 5-year plan moving forward?
So, you know, I'll reserve my comments for the 12th Malaysia plan.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I hope that it's a plan where it will be more execution focused rather than strategy focused.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I won't dive in deep into that. But the My Digital Blueprint is, to me, extremely exciting and very ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about ambition, it says that it wants to create 500,000 digital-centric jobs, close to 1 million or 900,000 micro SMEs adopting e-commerce, a new sales channel,
mm-hmm.
and then the government, 80% of their workflow going on cloud. I think that's fantastic. It's leading by example, right? And so this is one huge element I feel that should be front and center of the 12th Malaysia plan. Because it aligns with the projections that we see
mm-hmm.
in that, you know, going forward in the next few years, if Malaysia fully embraces, and by Malaysia, I mean public sector and private, if we fully embrace the whole digital transformation, whether it's small, whether it's huge, what the government has, it will generate an economic value that is equivalent to 20% of our GDP.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge, right? By just going on this digital transformation journey.
But would a 5-year plan be suitable for something that is fast-moving in nature? Digital technology moves really fast and you have new inventions, new gadgets, new apps coming out on a daily basis, for example. Would a 5-year plan be suitable for that? Or should it be, you know, perhaps re-look at every year or every 2 years at least?
I think a 5-year plan is very suitable.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I also do a 5-year plan, but it's fairly high level, yes. We want to know which direction to head towards to, okay? And like key focus areas. key focus areas that won't go away. Education, certain sectors, right? Governments, technology adoption and so on and so forth. All that won't go away in the next 10 years. It'll still be there. But breaking it down to what I mentioned earlier, breaking it down to executional focus on a year-to-year basis that aligns with the five-year plan, I think that's going to be crucial.
And Mark, do you think the 12 Malaysia plan could further accelerate Malaysia's aim to become a digital hub for the region? What key measures should we focus on to achieve this?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be slightly contentious here and say that maybe we can take baby steps first, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, jumping straight into a digital hub. Mm. I would say, you know, we're just turning around the pandemic, the health crisis. So I would focus very much on revenue and employment, right? Mm-hmm. Coupled with the fact that Malaysia is a relatively small domestic market, both in population size and spending power. So if you look at like what's really available for us, the internet allows literally any business to spread their wings and fly from the comfort of their homes, mm-hmm. or offices, right? So number one is just utilize the simple digital tools, plug and play software, cloud, improve efficiency, yes, but go beyond the shores of Malaysia. Export in this era is much easier than years before, right? So we work with Matrade to expand to more, to get SMEs to expand their consumer base into like more countries. So that's one. Number two is self-plug here, YouTube. YouTube is a fantastic tool, not just for entertainment, information, or education, but a way to market a product or market a service or even earn an income, right? Mm-hmm. Beyond Malaysia. So I'll give you a homegrown example, Lesko Park, mm-hmm. An animation studio, high quality 3D animation based in Malaysia. They have over 10 million subscribers. Majority of them are not from Malaysia, right? So it's a great case of a growing export. And the last one, I would say it's arguably tougher to crack. And it's for our kerajaan, you know, our government to really forge ahead with multilateral digital trade agreements. You know, we spoke about a digital free trade zone, widen access to SMEs. And, you know, as outlined in the My Digital Blueprint, really to, you know, encourage and work towards building that trusted, that secure digital playground to facilitate cross-border data flows, at least within ASEAN, right? I think that's a huge opportunity.
But Mark, how do we make digital transformation a bit more inclusive? And what strategies are needed in the 12th Malaysia Plan to make sure that no one is left behind when it comes to the three areas discussed by Khazanah Research Institute, access, affordability and application? What gaps can be addressed quickly?
Rizal, thank you for asking this question. I think it's super critical because I feel that digital or the internet is like electricity, mm-hmm. right? And no one in Malaysia should be living with a candlelight as their main source of energy. So inclusivity is in fact quite paradoxical, and it covers a wide range. But I'll speak about only four areas. Mm-hmm. Number one is infrastructure. Number two is SMEs. Number three is students. And number four is the underserved. So I'll just quickly go through the infrastructure bit because I'm not an expert here. Internet reliability and speed, fiberization, 5G, you know, lower cost of entry, we all know the story. Our coverage is 90% penetration, which is fantastic. And I know there are plenty of efforts underway to improve speed, uptime and cost, right? So that's number one. Number two is, I spoke about SMEs. I think the barrier to digital adoption is that unlike large companies with larger budgets and like you know, better access to talent, SMEs tend to be extremely lean, scrappy, and they sometimes scratch their heads, right, as to what to do right now. So I think there's a huge role for the government to play, whether it's incentivization, motivation, mm-hmm. Training, so on and so forth. Number three is students. 6 million of them. Give them the platform, internet connectivity, devices and software. If we don't give them, they're already there, right? They're already on YouTube, they're using digital anyway. So why not transform the education system, right, to be more hybrid or digital focused? So a good example is for many years, for a few years, we've been working with MOE to give free Google Classroom to all public schools. And we have over 3 million students and teachers on Google Classroom. So my push is, what about all of them? Instead of 3 million, why not 6 million? So I think that's going to be quite critical, right, in bridging the divide. Mm-hmm. The last bit is on the underserved, women, and you know, folks in the rural areas, right? So I would encourage you know, some programs to be focused on bridging this digital divide. Mm-hmm. And it's hugely important to us as well. So much so that we actually invested in running a program with Nestle, with Maggie, to help women entrepreneurs get on this rocket ship, which is the internet or the digital transformation.
On that note, thank you very much, Mark Wu, Pengarah Urusan Google Malaysia, membincangkan berkenaan dengan RMK ke-12 dan juga apakah harapan dan juga apakah yang perlu ditumpukan kerajaan bergerak ke hadapan untuk memastikan Malaysia menjadi hub digital serantau.
Selepas tertangguh selama setahun, bagaimana rancangan Malaysia ke-12 akan menghidupkan semula ekonomi negara selepas lumpuh akibat pandemik? Bagaimana ia memastikan selepas terencat pertumbuhan selama 2 tahun, ekonomi dapat dibangunkan dengan lebih baik untuk 5 tahun akan datang? Bagaimana RMK12 akan menjamin pembinaan Malaysia yang lebih baik? Saksikan liputan istimewa rancangan Malaysia ke-12 Isnin 27 September bermula jam 10.30 pagi hanya di Astro Awani, saluran berita paling dipercayai di Malaysia.
Seterusnya, keluasan rumah dalam program perumahan rakyat PPR seharusnya berbeza antara satu sama lain demi kesejahteraan penghuninya. Pengarah kajian Khazanah Research Institute Dr. Suraya Ismail berpendapat PPR yang dibina sekarang hanya menitikberatkan kepadatan namun mengabaikan konsep kesejahteraan.
Jelas Dr. Suraya, setiap rumah sepatutnya menitikberatkan kesejahteraan dan keselesaan mereka yang bakal menghuninya.
Keluasan sesebuah rumah untuk PPR tidak boleh sekata. Kena berbeza-beza. Social housing kena berbeza-beza. Kerana kita bagi rumah social housing PPR kepada golongan miskin, tapi suruh dia, you know, duduk rapat-rapat antara keluarga, mungkin ada kena masalah lain. Jadi ini kita tu, kalau kita cakap pasal sejahtera, ini bukan sejahtera.
Beliau juga menjelaskan seringkali rumah PPR dibina dengan menitikberatkan kepadatan untuk pemaju mengaut keuntungan.
Kalau benar-benarlah kita nak menolong rakyat Malaysia, kenapa kos dijadikan standard? Patutnya kesejahteraan dijadikan standard. Sebab jika rumah itu elok dan juga rumah itu memberi satu kepuasan kepada golongan yang perlu dibantu, mereka juga boleh menolong kepada ekonomi negara. Tetapi kalau dekat rumah pun dia dah sakit jiwa kan, tengok tak boleh buat apa-apa, kecil sangat, sempit sangat, dengan desain yang sangat orang kata rendah standardnya, jadi dia akan lebih banyak bawa masalah.
Dr. Suraya menjelaskan standard PPR yang bakal dibina bukan lagi rumah kos rendah, sebaliknya perlu standard rumah mampu milik seperti projek perumahan swasta. Isu perumahan yang tidak mampu dimiliki rakyat merupakan antara tumpuan dalam rancangan Malaysia ke-12 yang akan dibentangkan di Dewan Rakyat minggu depan.
Bertemu kembali, saham di pasaran Asia catat peningkatan awal pagi ini dengan pelabur menantikan perkembangan berkenaan dengan Evergrande. Menurut laporan CNBC, saham di pasaran Amerika terdahulu ditutup tinggi pada Khamis dengan pelabur dilapor selesa dengan keputusan simpanan Persekutuan Amerika berkenaan pengurangan pembelian bond dan peningkatan kadar faedah. Pada sidang media yang diadakan simpanan Persekutuan, pengurangan pembelian bond dijangka bermula pada November ini dan juga kenaikan kadar faedah pada tahun depan. Pada penutup, indeks Dow Jones naik 500 mata, S&P 500 naik 53 mata dan Nasdaq naik 155 mata. Dalam masa yang sama, Reuters lapor pelabur tidak terkesan dengan laporan aktiviti perniagaan yang lemah dan peningkatan permohonan bantuan pekerjaan mingguan di Amerika. Ini selari dengan jangkaan suku ketiga yang lemah. Sementara itu, sentimen berkenaan kesan limpahan daripada kemungkinan Evergrande akan mungkir pada Khamis mula reda. Reuters lapor ada pelabur yang memegang bond dolar Evergrande telah putus harapan akan dapat bayaran kupon. Evergrande yang berhutang $305 bilion akan mungkir jika tiada bayaran dibuat dalam masa 30 hari daripada tarikh matang. Evergrande pada Khamis keluarkan kenyataan yang ia akan bayar kupon berkenaan kepada pemegang bond di China. Pakar ekonomi yang dipetik The Associated Press percaya kerajaan China mungkin akan campur tangan untuk bantu pembeli kediaman yang sepatutnya dibina Evergrande. Hutang Evergrande adalah sekitar 2% daripada KDNK China dan juga pakar yang dipetik AP percaya ia mampu untuk serap kesan jika Evergrande mungkir. Dan kita lihat apa kata pakar berkenaan dengan laporan tersebut.
The bondholders have agreed to a out of the exchange settlement of their interest payment due today, which means they have restructured the loan or they have received payment in kind. So that theoretically they have averted default. I think there's news came out that from government sources that they will try to arrange some kind of takeover. According to some news, that the Evergrande Group will be split into three separate entities, and then the local governments like Guangdong Province, Shanghai, whatever, will take over part of the operations and then let the SOEs buy into these separate entities, and then what will end up is an orderly liquidation of Evergrande assets. I think as of now, I think people can breathe a little bit easier. I think the Chinese government and the market managed to avoid a potential disaster like a Lehman Brothers moment that which trigger a financial tsunami. The real estate sector in China, because it's after all, it's still over leveraged. So a great many real estate developers really have to lower their leverage, lower their borrowing.
Dan sekian Niaga Awani ikuti perjalanan 100 hari pertama Kabinet Pimpinan Datuk Seri Ismail Sabri Yaakob untuk membuktikan keberhasilan dan pencapaian kepada rakyat. Dan segala maklumat lain dalam astroawani.com, juga aplikasi Astro Awani. Dan terima kasih kerana menonton saluran berita paling dipercayai di Malaysia. Saya Riza Zulkapli. Salam hormat.